Accession number 31467, Mr. Tom Handley, Rail 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Handley?
I was born in Romford in Essex on the 12th of May 1922.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? You know, what your parents did for a living, you know.
My father was a pharmacist. And he was unusual because he was the second son of a group of seven children, and he came down to London in he called it '07, having been born in near Chester, in a farming community. He was a lot of his brothers and sisters and the people they married, all to do with farming. But my father went to college in London and became a pharmacist. I don't know how he wangled that, but...
your mother?
He met my mother when he was down in London. And they very soon had a son, but they got married before that. He made it legal. And they lived near to Bow in London, and their life took them gradually out on the eastern flanks of London to Essex. And then, and he was a pharmacist. He was a manager at Boots, the chemist. All that time, he was very quickly made a manager, within 4 years of starting work.
Was he involved in the Great War, or was it?
He joined the Terriers, and very soon after that, the First World War started, and war was declared on August the 4th, and he was in France by August the 9th. And he was soon made a sergeant because of his knowledge of and use of drugs. They didn't have many drugs as we have now.
Who was he with? RAMC?
RAMC, yes.
And how did his First World War career go? I mean, how did it go for him? I mean, was he wounded, or what was it like for him?
He wasn't wounded at all. He used to go out onto the no man's land and collect the wounded. On the few occasions when he used to talk about the war, the very few occasions we've since realised, we've gathered that that's what he did. And he kept his rank and his position in the army by being a chemist, a pharmacist. He was captured and released twice in 1914. So that by Christmas it was the mobility of the front, whereas he was in the hospital looking after English, Germans, Dutch, French, Belgians, everybody. If injured person, they were in the hospital. And he just moved about like that. He had to come home in 1915 on his first leave because one of his three sons had died in his absence. Of diphtheria, although they were taken away to the isolation hospital at Romford, at Rush Green.
So that would have been one of your older brothers, had he survived?
Yes, there were three. They had three sons to start with, and it was the youngest one of those that didn't survive the illness. My elder brother was an turned out to be an engineer. I mean, he was the clever member of the family. Arthur, who was the second member of the family, he was the unfortunate member of the family. He fell out of his pram for some reason, I don't know what, when he was very young, and damaged his hearing. He only had about 5% hearing for the rest of his life. And when he was going to school, and the leaving age was 14, as soon as the elder brother reached 14, he, my second brother, insisted on leaving as well and going to work with him, with his elder brother. Within a week, he'd lost 3 fingers on his right hand in an accident. So he was the sort of the hard luck member of the family for all the way along the line. He couldn't do any manipulative jobs, and he finished up as a window cleaner.
Now, so you were born in 1922, was it a fairly comfortable upbringing for you? I mean, it's not a bad job, boots manager.
No, it wasn't. I can remember the very first memories I've got are of the general strike in 1926. I can remember the ridiculously small paper that we bought, or somebody bought. It was circulating in the house. And I can remember that, but very little else. I can remember things that used to happen, though, that might be of interest in the future. We used to have an oil man called, and you knew he was there before you opened the door. You could smell him. And he sold what you would expect him to sell: candles, paraffin, and things like that. He was one man that called, and the other one rang a bell as he walked along carrying his wares on his head on a big platform, and he was known as the muffin man. They weren't muffins, they were crumpets, but he was known as the muffin man. I remember those a long time ago, and I can remember a Wall's ice cream man pushing a big barrel-like thing, selling his ice cream and singing out his song, "Wall's ices are nice, they're lovely, try them, they're grand," as he went along. And if I was lucky and had a penny, I bought a snow fruit, which I made last for about 2 hours, with any luck.
Now, so you were reasonably comfortably off, living in Romford?
Living in Romford, yes.
Now, tell me about your education.
After the very first school I went to, which was a private school, St. Mary's, I went to St. Edward's School, which was a church school, had the field of which touched our fence at the bottom of the garden, but I wasn't allowed to go to school that way. I had to go the long way round. And I stayed there till I was about 15, nearly.
Now, how did you do at school? What subjects did you like, were good at? What didn't you like, bad at? I know they're not always the same, but you know they often are.
No, I liked maths. I liked a certain amount of English. I liked science very much. And I couldn't stand history, at least the way it was taught. It seemed to be a whole list of kings and queens, dates and wars. Nothing about how the people lived in the times at that time. And consequently, on my final list, "Is not very good at subjects he is not interested in." It actually said that, a book of ridiculous things to write, especially since I've had to write several reports because I became a school teacher later.
Did you get a qualification then? A school certificate, was it then?
I've never heard of a qualifications, but there weren't such things, so, I don't think, when we left.
So how old were you when you left school?
About 14 or 15. 15, I think.
So about 19, 37.
37, yes. Now, a bit later, or leaving that school, because I went on to West Ham Technical School.
Right, now what were you doing there?
Basically a matric course, which I didn't finish.
A matric course in what?
The matric was an examination, and you had to try and pass 5 or 6 subjects, which included, for me, physics and chemistry, which I found very interesting, and maths. They were good. A certain amount of English. But, sorry, where were we?
Now, so were you interested in sport at all?
Not particularly. Only I used to go and watch rather than perform. I was quite... At school, I had been a runner. The 220, as they used to call it, because it was in yards in those days. That was my race. Sort of a long sprint. And we played in the cricket team and the football team. I found that automatic, you know, you're at school, you're in the football team. You know. Didn't think of anything else. And I'm at about 12 or 13, I joined the Cubs, or the Scouts, as they were. And I met up with about half a dozen fellows, and we formed a sort of a group, a gang, if you like. And we used to vibe with one another. All had some common interests, otherwise we wouldn't have hung about together. And when the war came...
Hang on. So what did you do with the Boy Scouts? What sort of activities?
Going to camps. Going to camps. During the week, I didn't used to attend scout meetings. I used to, most of us in this group of six of us, we were cub leaders, bringing on young ones. And it was a very active group.
And was there any military tinge to Boy Scouts? I mean, it was originally meant to be military, but how I don't know how much it survived.
Well, only the fact that we all wore uniforms and carried a 6-foot staff and a dagger. I wouldn't have known what to do with mine at the time. But...
Now, were you still at the college, West Ham or East Ham? I've forgotten which.
West Ham.
West Ham College. Were you still at West Ham College when the war broke out then?
Yes.
Now, do you remember, it's the old thing, do you remember the day war broke out?
Oh, yes.
What were you doing? What happened for you?
I was left at home because my mother and father had gone to church. And I was at home just playing, I don't know what I was doing particularly. But I know we had the radio on a lot, and I heard the initial bit of Chamberlain announce war, and almost immediately, about 11:15, almost immediately the air raid war, there was an air raid warning, which turned out to be a tiger moth off the south coast or something innocuous.
It was quite
frightening at the time, because the moment we heard that war was coming and war was going to be in the air and war was going to be the dropping of bombs on civilians and that sort of thing, and then almost immediately, remember, he'd said, "We are at war with Germany." And then the sirens wailed. It was a bit frightening until everybody thought it was a bit of a joke by about 12:30.
Now, the thing is, you were 17 in 1939.
Yes.
Right smack bang in the age group that's going to get involved. Did you have any thoughts about that? I mean, did you realise how it was going to affect you?
No, but I was, by then, I think I was, was I, very soon afterwards, I became a junior chemist. A lab boy, really.
So you left the college?
Left the college. And he got a job at a chemical, with a chemical firm.
So as a...
Do you want to know their name?
Yeah, that helps them, yeah.
They were Messrs A. Boke Roberts and Company.
And were you a laboratory assistant? Or
a laboratory, yes, in a laboratory. He worked in a laboratory.
And this was a chemical firm?
A chemical firm, yeah.
And what exactly were you doing? Give us an idea of your daily duties.
I had to start with, to do with water. We had to soften water, make sure the water softeners were working, that were used in the boilers that were kept going all the time, supplying heat where it was needed in the factory for manufacturing chemicals. We had to use softeners for that water, and one of the products of this firm were water hardeners, believe it or not, which we sent to Burton-on-Trent for the manufacture of, guess something, beer. And that was to start with, and the rest of the time you were testing for quality. Which varied from soda ash, soda, to cobalt metal. But the chief product of this firm was the burning of sulfur. They burnt sulfur, giving rise to sulfuric acid, sulfurous acids, and all the salts that came from them. And one of the products was called sodium hypochlorite, which was a developer, and it had to be particularly pure, and it was declared, our job was then declared a reserved occupation. And then we couldn't get out of it.
Now, how did you feel about that?
Well, I wanted to get out of it, out of the job before, but I was told I couldn't go unless I volunteered for air crew. So eventually I volunteered for air crew.
So you didn't want to stay in this, or you didn't want to be in reserved occupation?
Oh, well, while this was going on, the Battle of Britain was going on over our heads. And then we could see all these stripes in the sky, and we got frightened to death when we were in a cinema one Saturday afternoon and the first major raid on the docks of London occurred. A daylight raid one Saturday afternoon, and my parents were worried stiff, where was I? And I was trying to find my way home. I was on buses, and then we had to stop the bus because there was a bomb in the road or something like that, you know, that sort of thing. And eventually I got home and realised that I'd been where I'd been, in the midst of a raid. And the terrible noises, bangs and crashes, and then a whining noise of a diving aircraft.
That was the first of many, I presume. What effect did the German air raids have in Romford? I mean, was Romford hit much?
Not so much in the Blitz as by the V1s and the V2s later on in the war.
So in the first phase, mainly you'd see them going through?
Yes.
Or hear them going over?
Yes, you'd hear them and you'd see the flashes and... You've got a lot of noise from the anti-aircraft guns, because they were quite big guns and they were quite mobile. They come along to down your road and leash off about half a dozen rounds and then clear off. Have you blown all your windows in?
It would do that, would it?
Yes. Not all your windows.
So they were, that was all going on. Now, what about air raid defences? Did you have a gas mask issued?
A gas mask, yes.
What do you remember? Was it issued and were you given a gas mask test in a chamber?
No test. Taught how to put it on.
What was it like to wear? Because people don't wear
them. Uncomfortable for me. I found it very confining. I could put up with it for a few minutes, but I wouldn't like to have worn it for any length of time.
Was it difficult to breathe in them, or was it just having something on you?
You could breathe in through the filters, and then it released the air pressure. When you breathe out, it made a sort of sound here.
Under your cheeks?
Yes. And... I think the most frightening thing was the ones for things for little children, like in a cot. And we had strict instructions, if we ever had to do it, to put your own gas mask on first, and then see to the child. I remember that as clear as a bell.
Now, what about
carried them about in little cardboard boxes.
Did you have Anderson shelters or any kind of shelter, Morrison shelter or communal centre shelters?
We at our house had no shelter. No, I don't know why. I couldn't say about that. So if when there was the Blitz coming and the bombs were whistling around the place,
You're just talking about the air raid shelters. What would you do?
Well, we used to stand away from glass when the bombs were really coming down. You could hear them approaching you. We stand clear of the glass, and then I was in a friend's house, and they had a Morrison shelter, which was a sort of a table. And one of the bombs was very close, and when it was settled down, we looked around, and there was my friend's sister and his mother and father all trying to get under the Morrison's shelter. It was quite a what you might call a compromising position to be in. And so my friend and I went outside, where it was brilliant. Everywhere was brilliantly lit because they've been incendiary bombs, and they were in the park near us, so we set off carrying two sandbags each, and we found four, but when we put the last one out, that was the last one. So suddenly we're in the black dark. We found one another by calling, and we found one another and stopped suddenly, and we didn't know why, but we did stop, and we sort of felt our way around in the black dark, and there appeared to be a big hole in front of us. then somebody else came along with a torch, and it was a hole that had been dug out previously, nothing to do with that raid, where there had been a bomb, and it was all full of water. So if we'd gone into it, that would have been the end of it, because it had sheer sides.
So how did you put out the incendiaries? Just with was it a half-filled sandbag or?
Oh yes, just it's a burning bomb. Just put the sandbag on top of it.
Stop the air getting to it.
Yes, smothered it.
And then pick it up and go to the next one.
Yes. Well, you left that sandbag where it was.
Right. So it's one sandbag per.
One sandbag per bomb.
And did you put many out that way?
Not many, because there were other people doing the same thing. But, I mean, it depended what you could carry, really. If you could carry more than two sandbags, you could put out more than two bombs.
Now, any other thing? What about rationing? Did that affect your life much? Food
and clothing
rationing?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, it meant my mother always seemed to be complaining about the shortage of this and couldn't get that, and there never seemed to be enough to eat to me. I used to be sent shopping to get these meagre amounts of food and give up your ration book, which was duly cut out and marked. And we never went hungry. That was due to the ingenuity of the people doing the cooking, usually. And I think that's about all I can tell you about that.
What about clothing rationing? Did that affect you much, or did you just get?
No, didn't affect me. Didn't affect me. I just wore the clothes I had.
What did you do for entertainment in those times? I mean, you're working at the chemical factory, you know. I mean, what did you do in the evening? Did you drink, or I mean, any games you played, or clubs?
We played a lot of cards.
Where?
At home. We used to play all sorts of cheap gambling games. Then we got on to solo whist. Didn't get on to bridge. Not then.
But you wouldn't go out to boys' clubs or pubs or any of the other?
No, I didn't.
Cinema?
Cinema, yes. Cinema we went to quite a bit with our friends.
What was it like? Because cinema was different then, wasn't it? It was a whole programme of...
Oh yes, you got the whole thing. You got a major film and a lesser film, a B film, and probably an organ recital, if the cinema had got one, and even as an act on the stage. And I don't know if that was during the war or just before the war.
What sort of films were popular with people of your age, 17, 18, 19?
Cowboys, mostly. In fact, there seemed to be... That's all they seemed to make in, though. It seemed to me that part of the American history, about which we knew very little, and it was very short...
But it generated all the films.
But it had a magnificent following, yes. And Charlie Chaplin and people like that were on